Hello and welcome to Wise Women, the Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experiences of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything.
Hello, we are back and this time with a very lovely email inquiry full of questions, which we would like to address in full because the questions were so interesting and kind of relevant.
All the rest of you, questions terribly boring. Yeah. No, that's not true. We really love questions.
Send us your questions. We appreciate questions and we do try to answer questions. Even if they, even if there are many of them, we will always try and
even if the
questions.
Answer is, I don't know.
Yeah. Which I think some of the answer is to this. So a lovely chap called John Goldsmith sent me an email, and he is a reverend within an independent religious order called the Oriental Orthodox Order in the West. And he is asking about how North American Wicca may differ from British Wicca. And the truthful answer to that is, I don't know enough about American Wicca to comment at all.
But he did follow up with some.
He did, yeah, but I thought we'd do them one at a time. Yeah. But my main comment is that Wicca isn't what I do.
No.
So Wicca is a kind of newish iteration of pagan witchcraft practice. And it seems to be, and again, please understand that these observations are coming from ignorance. I've not participated in anything Wiccan, and these observations are only that. They are what I have observed from the outside,
yes,
and may therefore be completely wrong or represent only a very small minority of what's in Wicca. But from what I see, Wicca is, in some ways, and I don't mean this as a negative observation at all, but it seems to me like it's kind of a religion in that there appears to be prescriptions, so as it were, about what one does and how one behaves and what the correct...
And priests and priestesses?
And priests and priestesses. Yes, definitely. And that... So his next question is, so in the American Wiccan tradition that he is aware of, there are particular sacred animals, and they are things like bears, buffaloes, and bald eagles. Can I suggest four animals for the directions and the seasons? And in Wicca, in Britain, I am sure there will be four animals for the directions and the seasons. But in the old iteration of British witchcraft, which is, well, the iterations of British witchcraft pre-Wicca are kind of Gardnerian witchcraft, which again is a kind of, it's got some guidelines and a structure and all the rest of it, but before that we have basically hedge witchery running alongside through time, we have hedge witchery. I'm a hedge witch. I don't subscribe to external rules. My witchery and my craft arise out of communion with land, with spirit, with iterations of the divine as they are manifest through the metaphor of spirits of place, spirits of beings, helping spirits, etc., etc. And so for me, it is not possible to unilaterally answer that question, because who the spirits are is completely dependent on place, which then brings us back round to, it's totally appropriate that an American witch might have as her sacred animals bears, buffaloes and bald eagles, because those are the beings of the landscape in which she dwells. In the UK, we will have, actually often, the animals of the directions are things like a wolf, which doesn't live here anymore, a bear, doesn't live here anymore, but they used to be the animals of our landscape. Eagles, we do still have them. Dragons, they are a thing often mentioned, certainly amongst my hedge witchy
friends. Well, we've definitely got a swamp dragon in our house. It's called a beagle, but it's definitely a swamp dragon.
Okay, well, I'm talking about, yes, big Rory, perhaps related to serpents, dragons. But also, you know, yes, snakes and bees and frogs and those beings. But that I can't answer unilaterally because for me, what's precious, what's truly deeply magical is our own personal relationship with what we find ourselves in the presence of. And so, for example, it might be that a really potent ally for a native British witch might be the serpent or the frog or the honeybee or bear or wolf, even though that's very much reaching back into the history of place, or salmon or eagle or any of those things. But if you are in, for example, a very, very dry place or a very, very coastal, I don't know, I'm going to talk myself in and out of all of these. But basically, it will depend on who's there around you.
Yes.
And that the more local and specific to exactly where you are and where you dwell, you make your practice, the more potent it's likely to be. And so if there isn't a salmon for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles, there's or even a place that a salmon could dwell for miles and miles and miles and miles, there is no point in making that the ally of the West. And if indeed for you, the water actually lies very closely and directly to the east of where you are and not to the west at all, maybe you need to really inquire into, is that direction, is the important thing about that direction its fieriness or its wateriness? Which is it? And I don't believe there to be a unilaterally correct answer.
No, I'm thinking about the answer from the four holy beasts of Christianity, and I'd like to suggest a few bits of
go
that.
On then. Yeah.
But again, it can vary. Not everybody agrees where they would go. Mm-hmm. If we started off with the four holy beasts, there's the lion, the ox, the eagle, and the human.
Mm-hmm.
And they are each assigned an archangel, and they're each assigned a direction. So Raphael is the east, Uriel is the north, Gabriel is the west and Michael is the south. So you can work with archangels for the four corners if you want and the energies of those and ask them to reveal to you a creature that is sacred to them. Now for Michael, the archangel is the cat, that he's sacred, the cat is sacred to him. So you could equate that to the lion and use that, it could be the cougar. In America, for example. The eagle is easy, that's air, that would be associated with Raphael, which would be the east. So you haven't got a problem with that one. Though any bird that's actually, as you say, in your garden, local to you, if you constantly have cardinals visiting, it could be a cardinal that is your ally, but a bird of the air.
Yeah.
Gabriel is the west, and Gabriel is actually dogs.
Mm-hmm.
You'd think it might be a fish or something because Gabriel rules waters, but that would be the wolf or the coyote.
Mm-hmm.
And Uriel to the north is unicorn, and you don't see an awful lot of those around nowadays, but I think a Mustang could probably fit that one quite nicely.
Yeah.
If that's quite helpful.
I think he's asking it the other way around. He's saying, please don't give me American ones, give me English ones.
Oh, right, fine. Well, then
so
English,
would be, I mean, presumably just A.N. Horse will pass muster as a unicorn.
A.N. Horse will probably pass muster as a unicorn, yes. But also Uriel for the north is chameleons, but we don't get a lot of those around here, so you can't really do it.
No, but we do have the other lizards.
Yes. What I would do is I would mark out the four points of the compass, and Uriel north, Raphael east, Michael south, Gabriel West, just turn to each. If you know the Kabbalistic cross, do it. Otherwise, just cross yourself in the normal manner and ground yourself and bow to each angel in each direction and say, please show me the ally of this place.
Okay. What I would do.
Yes. No, actually, good. Great.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I love that. And I love it that we were talking about angels before we even got on air. Angels clearly need to be acknowledged to this day. Anyway, what I would do is there is an extraordinarily beautiful practice, which intriguingly seems to pop up worldwide, but most definitely has a strong, strong, strong presence in the United States, where it is called the Beauty Way. And here in Britain, I know it as the Seven Directions of the Warrior, which is a practice which the invitation is meet this practice in a myriad of different ways. So essentially the practice step one is that you observe with your heart, with your mind, with all of your physical beingness, what is above me, below me, before me, behind me, to my right, to my left, and within. So the first iteration of that, and to do that at minimum three times. On the first invocation of it, you are literally using your embodied presence to see what is embodiedly present. Mm-hmm. On the second iteration of it, perhaps you're reaching further than that with your mind, with your sensing, with your imagination, to what is beyond what is physically present, either in terms of mapping your actual physical reality. So before me is the end wall of my room, but beyond that is my neighbor's house, and then there's my garden, and then there's some fields, and then there's Moreton Hampstead, and then there's Okehampton, and you know, how far can you go in what you know of your patch? Mm-hmm. And then also to then take that into the world of the spirits and to really to feel, to sense, to ask, to inquire, exactly as you have of the angels, to ask who is there. And so above me it is likely to be a being of the air, although not necessarily
a bird.
It
might be a spider. Yes.
Yeah, it might be. It might be a bat, it might be a butterfly, it might be a star, but it could be, you know, any number of things. And that to really authentically feel into who is actually there. So above me and below me are likely to be beings of air, beings of earth. I mean, below me, for example, are dragons, many dragons, and they are in the earth. And one of the ways that I know and understand dragons is as an embodiment of and a metaphor for the earth energies that sometimes also get named as ley lines. And so the kind of serpentine energies within the earth.
and the centre of the earth is fire.
Is it?
To fuel the
Well,
kind of
yes, it is and it isn't, isn't it?
Yes, it is and it isn't. Yeah.
So just to be slightly more expansive on that, there is fire at the centre of the earth, but apparently that's not what's at the very centre of the earth now. No. They think it's a kind of crystal cave at the very centre of the earth with crystals that look exactly like trees. It's all just amazing. Anyway, and obviously between us and them are lots of rocks and lots of wonderful loam and you know, rotting leaves and rotting bodies of every kind.
And rivers.
All sorts of things. and so indeed, you know, beneath me, my ally could as easily be granite or, I'm back with the snake, who is for me very much the same energy or a similar energy to the dragon, and they speak to really similar things and, you know, yada, yada. But that the other thing I would like to say is that in Wicca, and again, I think this is correct, but I don't know it's correct.
So let us know if you're in Wicca.
Yeah,
send us
a
message.
Tell us, is this correct? I believe it's the case that in any invocation of the directions, you begin with the air in the east with the morning. Mm-hmm. Well, as a Celt and a hedge witch, I begin in the north with the night, because that is where the day begins. It's in the birthing belly of darkness.
Yes.
And so for me, the directions go north, east, south, west, not east, south, west, north.
Yeah.
And they go earth, air, fire, water, not air, fire, water, earth.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And so on, yeah, so I'm back around to where I began, which is I do not consider it appropriate for another to prescribe these animals. I think we need to find our own. We need to find our own truth.
Yeah.
And I'm not specifically Christian bashing at all when I say that following the prescriptions of others where our truths have been concerned over thousands of years has got us to the place we are now. And that if we trained ourselves more to truly discern what is true for me, and this becomes increasingly necessary, as we keep saying, we live in a post-truth world. So we have to discern for ourselves, what is my truth? What will I literally stake my life on? Because that's what's being asked of us, it seems to me, by these times, is that, you know, potentially choosing your side, if you like, choosing where you plant your flag may or may not cost you your life. And so what truth is it
that you were prepared
to die for?
Yes.
That's a big, more to the point, what truth is it that you are fully committed to live for?
That's probably the easiest way for people to hear that, but I absolutely get you. And also, as we were talking before, we were having a discussion about information, experience and knowledge. When somebody tells you what the ally is, it's information.
Mm-hmm.
And information is really worthless. This is an information-led world, and this is the problem with it, is you just get more information. Until you've experienced it for yourself and tried it out, would the ally be a rabbit? I don't like rabbits. I don't like rabbits. I don't know. But shall we give... No, but that's what one might do. You know, you find your resistance. Hmm. First, you have to find your resistance to the ally sometimes and clear that, and then see if the ally will help you with it. And it's through these experiences that you actually learn and can start shining this light.
Yeah.
And I'm teaching a course on sacred magic of the angels at the moment, and I'm being really, really mean with them, because I'm saying you don't do anything for anybody else with this sacred magic until you have experienced it yourself. Because if you do a petition for something to happen to somebody and they do get a miracle or something strange, they're going to go, well, what do I do with it now? How did that happen? Or what this? And if your answer is, I don't know, that's not going to help anyone in the long term. You actually need to say, I've been here, I've been in this point, and this is how it seemed to me.
Yeah.
You still have to say, it's only how it seemed to me, but at least you're saying, well, this is what happened.
I think it's really important to be... If we're going to, this is hilarious coming from me, bearing in mind all the places that we've been in this podcast, but I do think if you're going to kind of spout stuff to people, you've either got to be speaking from embodied experience or really, really, really clear that you're not.
Yes.
And
yes. 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 Make it very clear, this is what I've heard, but it's only what I've heard.
Yeah. Yes. And that especially now, as we, you know, got absolutely no way the majority of the time of knowing whether the thing that we've heard is actually coming from some
bot.
Or whether actually it's the embodied experience of countless different people or whatever. Anyway, let's not go down that particular rabbit hole. I would like to bring us back to this chap's questions,
thank you for writing, John.
Yes.
Because it's really nice to hear from another reverend.
No.
Especially because I got told off this week from an official in my church because there was a thing on Facebook about this is what a witch looks like.
Yeah.
And it was women who are working with nature. Mm-hmm. Just post pictures of themselves as ordinary women, because the goal is to change the image of witch, especially around Halloween, because and we women perpetrate it too. It's the gnarly old woman with the hooked nose and the warts and the evil spells, and we've got to stop doing that.
Totally, yeah.
So I posed a picture of me gathering sagebrush in Montana and a thing about being a vicar and a witch. And you can do both. And one of the church members really objected. Are you stupid? How dare you associate yourself with that kind of thing? No, you must not. You've got to hold the clarity. And I couldn't fight him on it. There was no point in it. But it was quite obvious he got the old concept of witch.
Yeah,
totally. The hook-nosed evil woman.
Yeah.
And really, part of this podcast is the whole goal of it. Part of the whole goal, you know that. Change the paradigm, you know. which is our wise women.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
End.
And so are vicars.
Thank you. Some of us are. Some of us aren't women.
Indeed. And some, plenty of witches aren't women either.
Oh, that's fair enough, yeah.
Okay, so, yeah, I would just like to add to that, just to the discussion quickly on the directions and the seasons and all the rest of it, that, yes, so, John, to answer your question about the seasons, so for me the seasons begin in the north with winter and with night before dawn, and personally with the wolf, even though I know that wolves haven't lived here in a long time. Though actually, there are some wolves in Britain, but they live in captivity. But also that for me, the dog carries the energy of wolf.
Mm.
And my lovely dog looks a bit like a wolf. My lovely dog who died last year looked exactly like a wolf. And often children would run up to her in the street going, "Is it a wolf?" That's beside the point. Yes, so the point was that for me, those above me, below me, before me, behind me, to my right, to my left, and ultimately within, when you're working on behalf of others, you have an ally within, or also you also have your body protector that can stand in the centre of that with you. That the calling of that, for me, is a creation of an exquisite, wise, compassionate, utterly loving, all-knowing gathering of spirits who are a temple of allies around you.
Mm.
When you know who is before you in the north, holding the place of winter, holding the darkness of unbeing and the, you know, all of the potentiality of the seeds that we might plant into that and the ways in which we might dream into the darkness, etc., that they are an extraordinary ally, a source of endless inspiration, succor, healing for ourselves, wisdom, support, and that to find who they authentically are for you is such a worthwhile undertaking. It really, really is.
This
and
is I an information you to do that. An information comment, but I love the way that what you're talking about, above, below, beside. Mm-hmm. All the directions really mirrors part of St. Patrick's Lorico, and of course St. Patrick was a Celtic Christian, had his problems, as many of them did, but the Celtic Christianity is very involved with nature, and part of the Lorico is Christ be with me, Christ within me, Christ behind me, Christ before me, Christ beside me, Christ to win me, Christ to comfort and restore me, Christ above me, Christ below me, Christ in quiet, Christ in danger, Christ in the hearts of all who love me, Christ in the mouth of friend and stranger. And
that's lovely.
It is, isn't it? But in a way, if you can say that and then look to see what's in front of you representing that Christos, because it's not just human.
Mm-hmm.
The Christos is whole, all of creation in this great dance. So I just wondered, I think I'll try that myself. And if I can remember, point back. And just go out into on the moor or out into one of the fields and turn round until I feel with my eyes shut and then say the Lorica and then look.
Yum scrum. Okay, so next question he asked was smudging. In his tradition, holy water can be used, but he's saying you need to be careful because holy water can spoil non-waterproof things, which is clearly a thing. Are there dry traditions for cleansing in our country? Yes, there absolutely are.
And can I just interrupt? Because you talked about how you spat, you threw elderflower champagne over somebody in exercise. Basically, holy water, yes, absolutely, is salt and water with a certain blessing. But you can pour it into something else and make that other something else holy. That's what Alicina does in the book. She has some holy water from Bell, puts it in the elderflower champagne, and therefore it works as holy water as well. So that's what that's about. But it was proper holy water, honestly.
Okay, and to me, proper holy water is any water which has been blessed, and by that I mean words of blessing have been spoken over it with the intention that it becomes holy.
Yes.
And I mean that in a completely non-Christian use of the word holy and the word blessing. Water's amazing, but not always appropriate. And yes, if you love your furniture and it's French polished or whatever, you don't want to go.
You don't want to burn it with a smudge stick either, do you?
No, you don't. But herbs have been used, I'm sure, for just as long as water to burn for the very same purposes of cleansing. And, of course, in America, there is white sage, and that's the thing that gets burned, you know, a lot over here as well. And I would
don't think you've actually said that John's in Texas.
I'm not convinced he is in Texas.
Oh.
That's where he's... I think he's in England.
Oh, I see.
And I think his church has its foundation in Texas.
That's I understand. Gotcha. Okay. I apologise for all these interruptions.
No, it's quite all right. So white sage is obviously the burning plant of some of the peoples of the continent of America, of Turtle Island. And yes, a lot of it gets exported around the world for the rest of us who feel like we've lost touch with our traditions. Mm. But particularly as so much of Western America has been or is on fire, I imagine a huge amount of their sage has been lost. Yeah. And I would suspect that they need it all themselves, and that also it is an unnecessary ridiculousness to put a sacred herbal plant from the States on a bloody aeroplane or in a boat and ship it halfway across the world to a country which has its own sacred and cleansing plants. And no disrespect to American white sage, but we have our own.
Mm.
And they are, the ones I know and work with, are our own garden sage, rosemary, lavender, mugwort, big time. I would normally mention mugwort first. Mm-hmm. And bay leaves.
Oh, bay leaves.
Culinary bay leaves, not laurel. Yes. It releases poisonous, noxious fumes, but bay releases beautiful, very marginally hallucinogenic fumes. Mm-hmm. All of those things, if you bundle them all together, release the most delicious smell. If you dry them and bundle them like a native smush stick, Native American smush stick, scrumptious, or over here, my own preferred way is to dry them and put them either individually, not as in one leaf at a time, but one plant at a time, in a bee smoker, which is a great way to generate smoke.
Bee smoker?
Mm-hmm. Things that you would smoke a hive with.
Ah, yes, gotcha.
Or simply onto a charcoal...
Tablet thing.
Or even just, set fire to it, blow it out, let it smoulder away and put it in a seashell or a metal bowl or... clay bowl,
And I've got lavender from my own lavender, and it's just lavender and sage. It's lovely.
Yeah, it is lovely.
But I haven't found the mugwort. I will find the mugwort.
You've missed it for this year, but I can give you some.
Thank you. Susie dries everything in your beautiful kitchen. I try to dry things over a Rayburn. If you haven't got something like that, how would you dry these things successfully?
Just hang it up in your house. Most people's houses are easily dry enough to dry a herb.
Okay. It won't just go mouldy.
No, shouldn't do. I mean, frankly, if herbs that you try hanging from your ceiling are going mouldy, go and get a dehydrator now. Dehumidifier, rather. Now, because your house is even damper than mine is. If I can dry herbs hanging them from the ceiling, frankly, anyone can, because our house is so damp.
And the other thing I suggest, even though it isn't local, which is incredibly wonderful and powerful, is frankincense crystals.
Yeah, okay, again, my difficulty with that is why would you import something local?
Yeah, well, they make them at Buckfast Abbey somehow. I don't know how they do it, so... Anyway, but yes, you're right, it's not local, but it is still gorgeous.
Okay, fair. And in fact, historically... of white sage and frankincense, it can definitely be said. And I actually don't know whether the research even exists for the plants I've mentioned, but they do kill the germs in the air. Yeah. And I think it was white sage in particular. If you smoke a room with white sage and shut the doors and windows, all the germs will still be dead 72 hours later.
Yeah.
And I think that frankincense...
will do the same.
Will do the same thing. And... I would very strongly suspect that one of those things that I've listed in our native kind of herb bundle, if you like, would also have the same effect. But I don't know that the research has been done.
Yeah, I don't suppose it has for a minute.
No. Okay, so to go back, and you know, yes, as well, when you're using smoke for cleansing or clearing or whatever, you would use it in exactly the same way with the same intention that you would use holy water. I think that's it for his questions. If we have forgotten one or misinterpreted one, John Goldsmith, please be back in touch.
Yes, and I'm sorry, I thought you were in the States.
Well, maybe he is. He doesn't actually say where he is.
I don't know where you are.
No.
I think he's in England.
That would make a lot of sense. The questions make a lot more sense now, so, yeah.
And what's the difference, just briefly, because we're on 30 minutes, what's the difference between an ally and a power animal?
Your power animal is part of you. Mm-hmm. Your ally is a friend.
Fair dues. Good answer. Thank you very much. And we'll see you again next week. God bless.
Bye.